But first of all, let's go straight to the Minister for Health, Fianna Fáil TD for Wicklow, Stephen Donnelly. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, Declan. How are you doing?
Good morning. I was just looking at the papers there and we're talking about the vaccine rollout being shambles and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, where are we? Let's just say it's not as everybody expected. However, you know, it is where it is. So where is it?
So it's going very well. So we set various targets over the last few weeks. The various targets have been met. In most cases, they've been exceeded. The big one was for last Sunday. The target was to vaccinate about 70,000 healthcare workers. And the total figure by end of Sunday was about 78,000, so that was great. And then on long-term residential care, with a big focus on nursing homes and then over 75s, residents in disability and mental health, was to get the first dose to all of them. That's about 70,000 people. In the end, we got about 66,000, and the ones we couldn't vaccinate were only because it was people who had COVID or close contact. It was basically clinical reasons. So we exceeded the 140,000 target for last Sunday, and then we're moving again very fast, moving on this week. So the figures I had in for end of day Wednesday, it's great to see, right? So total number of people who've got a first dose of the vaccine in the long-term residential care sector, it's about 72,000. It's 71,600. In healthcare workers, it's 76,000. And in the total on top of that, who've had a second dose as of end of day Wednesday, is just under 14,000. So what we wanted to do, what we said we'd do, is as soon as the vaccines came in, we'd get them out, we'd get them into people's arms, we'd target the frontline healthcare workers, we'd target long-term residential care. So that's all gone very well.
Okay, now, well, let me just put, instead of talking about the numbers, let's see, group one, and I'm reading it here from the HSE, adults aged 65 years and over, residents of long-term care facilities, and offering vaccination to all residents and staff on site. Is that done?
So first dose it is done, except for those who couldn't be vaccinated because they have or are recovering from COVID. So, for example, there's 589 nursing homes in the country. All nursing homes have had some or all of their residents and staff vaccinated, except for four. And those four were on public health grounds. They said, you just can't go into those nursing homes right now. So the short answer is yes.
Right, and what's this, the Irish Examiner, 181 nursing homes hit by virus outbreaks. Tie that in.
Well, they're separate things, obviously. So the reason that we pushed very hard to accelerate the vaccination program to the nursing homes was because of these outbreaks and because it's the most vulnerable group. More than one in every two fatalities in the first wave was from the nursing homes. So they quite rightly were the first priority, they're the first cohort, and we pushed hard to accelerate that. So that's gone well. But as you say, the nursing homes are under huge pressure. So there have been a lot of outbreaks. They had about 1,700 staff out, which has put them under immense pressure, either for COVID or close contacts, about 171 open outbreaks. So really serious. Now, the HSC and the HICWA, they've been working really closely with the nursing homes, with Tadhg Daly. I know you have him on the show from time to time from Nursing Homes Ireland. So there's a lot of extra money was provided, PPE was provided, infection prevention and control support, extra staff. We've moved to weekly serial testing, which has been very well received as well.
So is that wasn't really fulfilled, but there was extenuating circumstances. Is that what you're saying? From last Sunday, I think you were promising that that's cohort one would be done, but
it is fulfilled, right? So everyone in the nursing homes who could get a vaccination, what we're talking about is a number of people who had COVID. So the target was to cover the nursing homes and the over 65s in disability and mental health, so that has been done. There are people who we have to wait because they have COVID or they're recovering from COVID, and then we'll go back around and they'll get their first and then their second dose as well.
Okay. Well, before we move away from them, you might have heard in the news some nursing home staff have refused to be vaccinated against COVID-19. Out of 40 nursing homes contacted, uptake rates among staff range from 75 to 95%, while some staff declined because they were pregnant. Others were ineligible because they had recently been infected with the virus. However, as this nursing home staff member who spoke on condition that she remains anonymous explains, some colleagues were afraid to get the vaccine.
Probably know between 5 to 10 people who chose not to get it. Some people had fear regarding it, around the production of it. They didn't know enough about it. And other people just had other personal opinions regarding it.
Now, Minister, should they be still working in a nursing home?
Well, the approach we've taken, Declan, is that vaccinations are not something you can force people to take, right? And that we're respecting people's bodily integrity for all of the reasons we all understand. The good news is that almost, not 100%, but almost every resident opted to take it. And the figures we have are exactly as you said. On average, it's about 85% of nursing home staff. Now, I would like to see everybody take it. Obviously, there are cases where somebody may be pregnant, where they're saying, "Look, I'm choosing not to." And there are other cases as well where somebody has COVID or is recovering from COVID, where the clinical advice is they can't. But other than that, where there's no reason, the staff really should be taking it. Now, in the first instance, remember, it's to protect themselves. What we don't have yet is sufficient data to say how well it stops transmission of the virus. So what we know about these vaccines is they're really, really good at protecting you from getting sick. What the regulators and the companies don't yet know, we will know in time, but they don't yet know is, does it also reduce the risk of you transmitting the virus? But nonetheless, we would be looking for everyone in the nursing homes, and indeed right across the country, obviously, to take it,
yeah, but we could have a scenario where somebody, for health reasons, a resident, couldn't take the vaccine, and yet on the staff would be people who they're hesitant for some reason of taking it. Therefore, they could be putting those members, residents, at risk. And the question really is, should they still have a job in that particular nursing home?
Well, that really is a question for each individual nursing home. Certainly, what we're seeing amongst the staff we directly employ, so in the HSE and the hospitals and the nursing homes, you'll see not only is there a very high take-up, but there's a very, very high demand from people who have yet to get it. So certainly vaccine hesitancy is not a problem. But remember, when we're vaccinating nursing home staff, the science says we're not vaccinating them to stop the residents getting COVID. We're vaccinating the staff to keep the staff safe, because what the regulators and the pharmaceutical companies don't know yet is how much it reduces the risk of somebody passing the virus on, if you're with me.
Yeah, but it's really that somebody who could get it because they're not vaccinated, giving it to somebody who can't get it, they can't get the vaccination, but they can get coronavirus from a staff member who refuses to get it. You know, it'd just be a worry to people.
No, of course. Maybe I'm not explaining it very well. Apologies if I'm not. What I'm trying to say is it's unclear that not getting it, that getting it makes you any less transmissible. If that makes sense.
All right, I can see that point.
Yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it'd be better, as you said, if the majority, or at least all, would get it. On to cohort two, frontline healthcare workers in direct patient contact. Have they got it yet?
So that group is about 150,000 people right across the country. And right now, as of Wednesday, half of them, just over half, have had the first dose. And another amount again, most of the 13,800 who got their second dose are healthcare workers. So over half have had the first dose. And then there's a good number have also had the second dose. And we're moving on then. So we're working on the second doses for the healthcare workers who've already had it. And then we'd be going on to the rest of that cohort with the first dose then as soon as possible. So the plan is that the second dose would be largely done by about mid-March.
Okay, so mid-March for that number two. Does that stop you going to number three till then, or do you start earlier with the age 70 and older in the following order, 85 and older, 80 to 84, 75 to 79, 70 to 74?
We'll be able to answer that question with more certainty next week, Declan. So at the moment, because of AstraZeneca, there's an awful lot of uncertainty. Today is a big day. So today the European Medicines Agency is going to make a ruling on AstraZeneca. And there's a few things we're watching very closely. The first is, will they authorize the vaccine at all? We believe they will, but that's the first decision they have to make. The second decision they have to make then is the age groups. So is it from 16 and up? Is it from 18 and up? Is there a maximum age over which they say they don't want to do it or whatever? And then the third decision we're watching very closely is the number of weeks between dose one and two. So the company themselves have said, I think, 4 to 12 weeks, but different regulators may be taking different views. And all of these things will determine how quickly we can move. The other thing, which, of course, listeners will be very aware of, is AstraZeneca, to the huge annoyance of Ireland and the European Commission and all member states, with very little notice, last week informed the Commission that it was not going to be able to meet the supplies that it had committed to in the short term. Now, that's an ongoing conversation, so we're still pushing and the Commission is still pushing for as much volume, as much of the vaccine as possible into the country. And really, we need more information as to what's going to come in and what the regulator says to be able to accurately answer that. But certainly,
okay. And I'll come back to the different vaccines in a second. But just to finish, and I'm not going to go through the whole list of the rollout here. But it was suggested that, say, I'll only go to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How about number 5 as the last one? 65 to 69 year olds, supposed to be the beginning of April. Now, according to the Irish Times yesterday, the end of May. That would suggest we're about 7 weeks behind in our rollout.
So we're not behind or ahead in our rollout. The rollout is based on the supply that comes in. So our rollout program is dependent on two things: how much of the vaccine we get into the country and how quickly we get it from coming into the country into people's arms. That's it, right? So there's no plan. Like, no one has ever said this is what's going to happen, because nobody knows. As per Pfizer 2 weeks ago said they were going to have to reduce their supply for 1 week. AstraZeneca, out of the blue, said to the European Commission they're going to have to reduce theirs. So the only plan we can say with certainty is, as the vaccine comes in, what we need to be able to do is get it into people's arms as quickly as possible.
Yeah, just looking at the plan initially, AstraZeneca, 3,300,000. And we were supposed to get it, well, they were hoping early possible delivery date was January. Moderna is in there. That's not a bad allocation, really, is it? It's 880,000. And that was by the second part of January. I mean, are we getting anywhere like those? I know you say about AstraZeneca and there is a problem. But Moderna, are we getting that amount?
So the figure on Moderna, remember, these are all indicative figures, right? The figure on Moderna for January, February and March, so for the first quarter of the year, was 110,000 doses. So far, that is coming in as agreed. And then for AstraZeneca, there's a figure as well. So far, other than they had a 50% reduction in their supply for 1 week. But other than that, Pfizer is also coming in at the moment as agreed. But remember,
2,200,000 by Pfizer. Would we get all that by this weekend?
Oh, no, that was never. No, that was never. I don't know.
I'm seeing it here. I'm seeing published by the HSE, BioNTech, Pfizer. Ultra low temperature, minus 70. Approximately, the Irish allocation is 2,200,000, delivered, expected earliest by January 2021.
That's next year.
That's January 2021.
Sorry, yeah, but Declan, so I think what you're probably looking at is the total volume advance purchased, and then when those volumes would begin to come into the country. So with Pfizer, for example, the agreement with Pfizer was 41,000 a week in January, right? So that's about 160,000 for the month. So the figures you're looking at, it sounds to me like what you're looking at is the total amount purchased. And then, yeah, but there's no way the HSE is saying we should have millions of doses into the country in January. Like, I can't see what you're looking at, so I don't know. But I can assure you that the HSE is not suggesting that there were meant to be millions of doses of the vaccine in here in January. It sounds to me what you're looking at is the total.
Is the HSE published of it? The 14 million that was lauded at the time. CureVac, is that the one, the Novavax one, is it? That's due February 2021, and allocation 2,475,000 of them. There's loads
of them.
Just
a few things there, right? So it's not really.
And yet we're behind by 7 weeks.
No, we're not, Declan. Like CureVac, they haven't even applied for authorization yet, right? So no one is expecting that vaccine to arrive in the next few weeks. Like it's a vaccine that not only is not authorized, but that the company hasn't even asked for it to be authorized yet, right? So it seems to me what you're looking at is the preliminary advanced purchase agreements from the Commission. But you're looking at vaccines that haven't even been authorized. So, like, no one has ever suggested that there would be millions of doses of vaccine. The 14 million in total, that's the total advance purchase. But, again, these are preliminary agreements for vaccines that not only haven't been authorized, but that haven't even been applied for authorization. And that would be over the entire year. So the only two we can talk about with certainty are Pfizer and Moderna. They're the only two that are authorized. We're hoping that AstraZeneca is authorized today, and then we'll be able to talk with a bit more certainty about the volumes coming in.
Okay, and we'll see about Astra and the over 65s. A couple of things, this debate with zero COVID and all that, on one hand, I think NPHET have come down heavily against it. Other people, we get texts all the time, open up, you're killing the economy, all that sort of stuff. There's a small cohort for that. And let's make it local and say caravan parks. Where do we stand on that?
Where do we stand on caravan parks?
Due to open in March in County Wicklow. Should they be closed? And, you know, as part of a zero COVID strategy to a degree of restricting movement?
I can't really give you a decent answer on caravan parks in March. But let me try and step back and then talk to zero COVID and what the plan is. I think what people want to know, Declan, is what is the plan? Because people are fed up. You know it. I know it. Your listeners know it. You know, people have been asked a huge amount. People are at home. People have lost their jobs. You've got working parents who are trying to homeschool. There's a huge amount. People can't see their mums and dads. They can't hug their loved ones. People are finding it tough. And they're very rightly saying, look, what is the plan? So what the plan is the really important decision that got made this week was to extend Level 5 to the 5th of March. And that is a big ask of people. The good news is that it's working. So we've got this much more contagious virus now, the UK one. About 2 in every 3 new cases in Ireland are now from this much more contagious version. But I got an update last night from the chief medical officer, and this R number, the reproductive number, has fallen again. It's now between 0.4 and 0.7, and that's really, really good. And it's why the cases are falling. But we've a long way to go. So the plan is to keep the measures that are in place until the 5th of March, drive this virus right down as far as we can. At the same time, push on with the vaccination program, healthcare workers, nursing homes, residential care, the over 70s. And then from the 5th of March, a very careful and controlled opening up, right? That's the way we want to do it, so that we open up in a very careful way, we keep the virus suppressed, and we push on as fast as possible with the vaccine program. So that's the plan right now.
Okay, and Texter just said earliest delivery means delivery of the first batch, not delivery of everything. And I appreciate that. That's what you were saying about all those numbers. I was saying to you, at the same time, people will compare with Northern Ireland and you'll say, well, they had AstraZeneca and all that sort of stuff. Just a couple of others. The people rolling it out, did I see a tweet that suggested dentists could be a part of this, as well as pharmacists and people like that? Apart from that, what about the cost? In the UK, each dose delivered is to a doctor or whoever else £12.58. That's 25 quid for the two doses. We've just said 60. We're just throwing money around. 60.
No, no, they're very different. They're very different things. So in the UK, it's NHS doctors, right, who work directly for the NHS. Obviously, in Ireland, the GPs and the vast majority of pharmacists and dentists they're self-employed, you know, or they work in the private sector. So to the first question that your listener asked, will dentists be included? My answer to that is I want them to be. So I've asked the Department of Health to work directly with the Irish Dental Association to put in place a similar deal that we put in place for the GPs and the pharmacists. I think we need as many vaccinators as possible. Because in spite of this very frustrating news from AstraZeneca, the plan is, or the schedule, the preliminary schedule, means that by Q2, Q3, we could be seeing very high quantities of vaccine come into the country. And as I said, as it comes in, we got to get it out the door. We got to get it into people's arms. So the more vaccinators, the better. And I think dentists should indeed be part of that. Now, the deal, as you rightly say, that has been struck with the GPs and with the pharmacists is exactly that, right? So it's an amount for the first dose, an amount for the second dose, and then there's a €10 administration fee as well.
Okay, gosh, there's so many questions coming in. I'm just looking at the clock as well. John Wall has been in touch from Limerick. He says he's got an outstanding issue with you, an issue that was raised in the Dáil on his behalf by Alan Kelly to Micheál Martin, and you were involved in some way with a letter, and he's still awaiting a reply. Obviously, we won't go into his circumstances, but are you familiar with John Wall?
Oh yeah, powerful advocate. John is a really powerful advocate for something really, really important, which is that people who are in the situation where they've been diagnosed with a terminal condition have an automatic right to a medical card. And at the moment, the rule is that if you have a diagnosis of less than a year, I know it's very morbid and I'm sorry, but this is the topic, you get one. And what John has been advocating for very, very powerfully is that that 1 year time would be extended to 2 years. So on the back of that, Simon Harris, when he was in the role I'm now in, he commissioned a report to see how that could be done. I got the report. The report said you need primary legislation to do it, and said, you know, it's complex. So what I did was immediately tasked the department with coming back within a very short period of time, given everything that's going on, with exactly how we do that. So I'll be expecting that report in soon. And it is in the programme for government, and we fully intend on moving on this. But the report that Simon got, that I then inherited, basically said, in order to do this, you've got to do it with legislation. So we just want to make sure that we get it right.
I'm just conscious of people like John's position. They're terminal. You know, they can't really be waiting on reports and things, especially if something was raised in the Dáil in November, you know?
Oh, well, it's been raised long before then, Declan. But
yeah, I know, but this is the last time, you know, sort of, end of January.
You, but, you know, when you got to do this right. You can't set it up and have the scheme collapse, right? So there's a reason these things haven't been done before. We've got to get it right, and the department, I have asked them to move at speed on this, and we are.
I mean, it's a medical card for a guy, you know what I mean? Well, TDs traditionally could always sort out medical cards. Maybe it's this rules are tightened up, but you know, the guy's in a
It's not so much that. It's when you need primary legislation and you're making big changes like this, you just have to do it right. And I know the system doesn't always move at the pace that I or you or John or any of your listeners would want, but we're moving it at a quicker pace than it is used to moving. Let me put it like that.
Okay, one last thing. Am I going to ignore the Conor Dempsey situation? Well, why don't I not and ask you? This week, Dr. Anthony O'Connor left Twitter because he said a close confidant of yourself was basically hassling him with direct messages. On your behalf politically, now I'm not saying your behalf, but your behalf politically, and he was very upset about it, obviously, and left Twitter. Now, we're familiar, of course, you and I, with Conor Dempsey from the 2011 election. So what is the story? Has he embarrassed you?
So ultimately, this is a private citizen sending a private message on Twitter to another private citizen without my knowledge, input, or anything else. Ultimately, that's what it is. I'm a big fan of Anthony's. I think he's a fantastic advocate, and I've met him in opposition. He's on the Sláinte Care Implementation Group. I think he's a great guy. I rang him afterwards to just say, listen, nothing to do with me, you know, and we had a good chat, and we talked about the important stuff, which is what's going on in healthcare. He works in Talla Hospital. What's going on there? They're doing a phenomenal job, and really, Declan, my focus right now is on healthcare. It's on the vaccines. I'm taking the lead on the quarantining work as well, as you know.
This guy has put you in this situation. Now, you say there's nothing to do with you now and all that, but back, you might remember our chat back in 2011 when you said he was doing this on a voluntary basis, that he was promoting your career, and you know, you were happy to get that. And yet, back in the expenses after the election from the Standards and Public Office, he gets a payment, which seemed to be at odds from what you were saying in 2011. So given that back in 2011 there was a difference, how can we believe now that there's a same situation where you're saying he doesn't work for you, but yet he's tweeting on your behalf?
I think that's a very unfair characterization, Declan, if I may say so. Declan, if someone you knew without your knowledge sent a private direct message on Twitter to somebody else, like, would you have to answer for that? You wouldn't. You know, like, really, this has nothing to do with me. I rang Anthony, you know, just to assure him of that. You know, I don't know what to tell you. A private citizen sends a message to another private citizen that I know nothing about. Like, it's nothing to do with me.
Claire tells me she has a clip of back in 2011. Let's hear some of what you said back then.
My company knows that I am supporting and helping Stephen's campaign. My company is receiving no money for it. There is no money being paid. I've done this mostly in my own personal time at the expense of my family and my own time, representing Stephen as a client pro bono.
That's at odds with the money he got. That's Conor Dempsey. In the Standards and Public Office, he got a payment.
Yeah, so these are two very separate issues, right? The question I was answering was about a direct message that Conor sent somebody off his own bat.
When he said he was pro bono, and yet he got a payment from your campaign.
Yeah, so 10 years ago, Conor and a bunch of other people, including me, we mounted a campaign. Obviously, I had no political experience. I'd never been involved in it. I remember walking into your studio with my hands shaking and my mouth dry. I was so nervous. I'd never done anything like it in my life. Conor, in good faith, volunteered, and I was delighted. He and many, many other people volunteered. It turns out that under the SIPO regulations, if somebody volunteers in a political campaign and the work they're doing is linked to their profession, that has to be recorded as benefit in kind. So basically, we worked with SIPO and they said, look, just work out what the amount would be, and then that's the amount you actually have to pay. So we said, grant. And that's all on the records, publicly available in a SIPO submission from 10 years ago.
And here's what you said 10 years ago.
Conor Dempsey, he's a member of the team. He's doing it completely free. I met him for the first time about 6 weeks ago, and he believed in what we're trying to do. But I just wanted to clarify, he is one guy. He is doing it completely for free, and it has nothing to do with any PR company.
So there you go. But you felt in retrospect, as your defence is, that you had to pay him because it was benefit in kind. So is he working for free now, or is he going to find that he gets some money later on down the road, or what's the story?
Declan, there is no story. I think that these are very unfair questions, to be perfectly honest with you, but there is no story. The situation in 2011 is, as I said, he came in good faith. Just like any of your listeners could say, actually, do you know, this man or woman here, they're running for election. I know something about whatever, policy or communications or whatever, graphic design, web design. I'm going to come in and I'm going to help them for free. And then you find out later from SIPO, they say, actually, no, if it's something that they do for a living, you have to record that as the same as work and you have to pay for it. And they say, oh, okay, well, thanks for letting us know. We did that. It all went into, it's all online. Like the reason people know about it is because it's all public record, you know, and it was done with SIPO. And really that's all there is to it.
Well, the reason you're answering questions about it at the moment, generally, and it's covered in the Irish Independent, etc., is because of what Conor Dempsey has done, what appears to be driving a respected doctor off social media. So, you know, you can put it down to him. What's your relationship with him at the moment?
He's a friend of mine. But, you know, what anyone does, Declan, what any individual off their own bat decides to tweet or DM somebody on Twitter or on Facebook or on whatever social media platform, like, that is a matter for them. You know, it would be like me asking you to account, say, Declan, there's a guy you know sent someone a private message the other day and that other guy took offence at it. What do you have to say about that? You'd say to me, Stephen, I have nothing to say about that. Nothing to do with me.
I say he used to work for me and he's got a history of working for me and, you know,
I don't think you would.
I think you'd say,
listen, there's a guy over there sent another guy over there a private message.
He worked for you. You know, so is there still a connection? Is he still, you know, is he part of the team now?
I mean, he's a friend of mine, but like, you know.
What are you going to say to him? Or did you say to him, desist at the moment, or you got me into a lot of hot water about this, or, you know, you're not doing me any good by this? Have you had that conversation?
No, I haven't spoken to him. The person I thought I needed to call was Anthony. So I called him and just said, listen, this is nothing to do with me. And
do you intend to call him?
Anthony can speak for himself. Declan, with the greatest respect, you're asking me about a private individual. He's not in politics, and you know, I think we've covered it. I really do.
Okay. All right, but you know, it was a topic. It was brought into the media by Conor Dempsey himself. So maybe if you're not happy, he's the person you should talk to. Would you agree?
No, the person I wanted to talk to was Anthony, because I wanted to say to Anthony, who I have a very good relationship with and will continue, I hope, to have a very good relationship, to say, here, look, nothing to do with me. And Anthony seemed, you know, happy that I'd called him on that, and then we got on to talking about the stuff that matters, which is healthcare and hospitals and COVID and vaccines.
Okay. Well, I hope we covered all those too this morning. Thanks for your time, Minister. That's really good. Thank you. All right. Talk to you again. Thank you. That's Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly.